The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey, did we have a crazy week or what? Welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. This is going to be a fun one today. Rod will be joining me in the first segment after the opening comments. And then we're going to get into the weeds on a couple of topics. One, I had a situation come up last week that I thought, you know what, this is something that needs to be shared with everyone. Lessons learned from someone who didn't ever deal with getting their affairs in order. So I had a situation come up where my clients that have been clients for 25 years passed away, went to their daughter, not married, no children. She then, in the midst of us trying to get everything wrapped up for her, she passed away. And what happened from there? So just some lessons learned. We'll get into that as well. And also just this year, you know, end of year stuff that we want to talk about as well. But let's focus first on what happened last week, and then we'll get Rod to talk about what happens this week and then what we expect to see towards the end of the year. So here's how last week started. We had hawkish comments by the Fed Chairman Powell following the announcement of another 75 basis point rate hike. That was last week. And it kind of cast a wet blanket over the markets, sending yields higher and stocks lower. Pretty much all the indices were down. Then we talk about Powell even a little bit deeper, how he just disappoints us, right? He doesn't really. He does what he says, which I told Hot Rod. It's kind of hard to beat on a guy who's doing exactly what they said they're going to do. And they're also saying that, hey, we're going to let things sort of catch up a little bit here before we get too crazy in making statements for the future. But we had the official statement released following the Federal Open Market Committee meeting. It appeared to suggest a potential for future easing of interest rates, right? That was kind of what happened at the start. So the market just crushed it. I mean, ran higher quickly. But then, about 30 minutes later, Fed Chairman, he's doing his post-meeting press conference, and the market was less enthusiastic. Losses accelerated into Thursday, led by big tech names, which were under pressure due to rising bond yields. The yield on the two-year Treasury note hit its highest level since 2007. Then sentiment took damage from workforce reduction freeze news from multiple technology companies. Some considered it a sign of a pending recession. Stocks then managed to erase a little bit of the week's losses on Friday following a strong employment report and a drop in the U.S. dollar. So what's going on? Well, in the statement accompanying the 75 basis point rate increase, the FOMC said the future rate increases would consider the cumulative monetary tightening to date and the lag in impact such tightening involves. And that's what I'm talking about. When they make a rate cut, it's estimated it takes nearly 6 months for us to feel the impact. So today, on Thursday, we had the inflation numbers released. So that was a big component of why the market took off, because it came in less than expected. Remember, the market moves on expectations, it then adjusts on realities, only to move again on further expectations. But in that post-meeting press conference that Fed Chairman Powell had, he struck a more hawkish tone. He said that current inflation data did not support any slowdown in rate increases, and that the terminal rate, that's the which point rates will no longer rise, may be higher than initially expected and stay there for longer than expected. Well, we'll see with this inflation number that came out today. It's not like, I think it came, we'll talk to Rod here in just a minute, see exactly where it came in. It's still high, but it's just coming down. And I was arguing a little bit with Rod prior to coming into the show about how it could be perceived that they'll slow down or stop raising rates, because if we're just now feeling the impact of the moves back in, let's say, May, then if you compound that, then you could see a path to getting, you know, two or 3% inflation. But my guess is they're going to continue to do what they say they're going to do, probably 50 basis points in December. And then we'll see, because they want to look to previous feds and say, what did they do when we were in a similar situation? Well, we have to go way, way back. And when they didn't continue to put the accelerator down, it rebounded quickly, inflation did, and we were in a real, real mess. So let's get Hot Rod on the phone and see what's going on. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, I was listening to a segment of my show a few weeks ago to just see if I said something correct. And I noticed the reflections in my voice after 20 years of doing this. You think I'd have it right by now. I'm pretty good on the upside, but when I get down low, I can't hear it. So I'm going to try to work on reflection in my voice as my new thing going into 2023. Everyone has to have goals. I don't really feel like losing weight. I don't really want to eat better. I don't want to exercise more, so that'll be my New Year's resolution. That's an easier one to accomplish. A guy with a lot of reflection in his voice is with me now on the phone. Of course, that's Mr. Rod Holloway down at our office, Comprehensive Financial Consultants, and the contributor to Glass in the Afternoon on Mondays and Fridays. Hot Rod, we talked about last week before you came on, just basically when, what the Fed did, what they said they were going to do, what was interpreted by the notes, and then what was obviously laid out pretty handedly by the Fed chairman during his news conference or his question and answer session. But we've had a lot happen since then. That 75 basis point thing and whatever he said, that's like in the rearview mirror. We've had a midterm election. We've had inflation numbers come out. So let's talk about Tuesday. So Tuesday, election day, right? Boom. We get to the end of the evening. There was no red wave. It's more of a red ripple, I guess, to the effect in the House of Representatives. For the market the next day sold off heavily. Now, that was Wednesday, just yesterday. And then we have inflation numbers that come out today, and the markets was roaring higher. So let's walk people through what's happened this week.
Yeah, sure. So with the election, we had talked coming in, maybe you get a 1 or 2 day rally if we saw the red wave. And that was really just simply based on the fact that the polls heading into the voting were telling us that people's greatest concern was the economy and inflation, and that people thought that Republicans were the ones that could best handle that. Now, as I said on Glass's show, if you get a 1 or 2 day rally because of that, that's about all you get out of it, because the reality is, just because Republicans potentially had a red wave and took over the House and maybe took over the Senate, that didn't mean there was any brand new legislation or even that there's legislation that Congress could write that would really have a meaningful impact in the short run on that. Then you get not a red wave, the red ripple, as you say, or whatever it is. Now, then I saw where MarketWatch wrote an article yesterday that talked about that they were pinning the sell-off on the fact that the Dems did much better than anticipated. You know, it's hard to predict in any given day exactly why it was up or down, other than the most basic and simple answer is on a day like yesterday when it's down, there's more sellers than buyers. Mm-hmm. But obviously people are looking for more behind it than just to say, oh, hey, there's more sellers today than there were buyers today. You had three positive days leading into yesterday. We had a CPI number that was just around the corner that was most certainly going to move the market, depending on whether it came in a little bit hot or a little bit cooler than expected. So I wasn't surprised by the pause when you didn't have the red wave. I was surprised at the magnitude of the sell-off, and especially that it picked up steam into the end of the day. But as I said, I think that may have been posturing to get ready to redeploy or take more chips off the table, depending on where that CPI number came out at on Thursday morning. And then it came out, and it came out at 7.7, so below, I think the estimate was for 8. So we finally had a decent tick down. You know, we've been ticking down, in which you expected 8-3 and you got an 8-2 type of a deal. You know, we've been just slowly grinding our way down in inflation. Not that this is a huge leap to go from 8 to 7.7, and the previous month was an 8.2. So even if you take the estimate of an 8 out and just say, okay, last month we were running annualized at 8.2, now it's at 7.7, that's not a huge drop. But it is a faster and bigger drop than what we have been seeing. And more importantly, it continues the trend that has started, in which we looked back and saw 9.1 being the peak. And so far, that has stayed the peak as we have consistently every month continued to go down. Now we have a big rally. And I think the biggest reason for the rally here is twofold. One, we had already kind of started one that we took a temporary pause on Wednesday with. And I had told on Glass's show that, you know, it's the feel-good season. It's November, December, typically do well. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a rally heading into the end of this. Well, a lower inflation number just gives it a little extra juice we know that the Fed is still going to keep moving. This number wasn't so low that all of a sudden the Fed's going to stop increasing interest rates. But it begins to lessen the probability that we have any more 75 basis points. I haven't seen the probability as of today, but yesterday, before we got the CPI number, it was like 54% probability of a 50 basis point increase in December, but still had about a 46% probability of 75 basis points. My guess would be that 75 basis point probability has dramatically dropped, and you may even have a probability now of maybe only doing 25 bips. Because one thing the Fed has been more consistently saying, both in Chairman Powell's speech after they announced their rate increase of 75 bips, and different full Fed governors and presidents speaking, is they have begun to acknowledge there is a lag in which the interest rate increases they implement takes a little while before they are fully felt within the economy. Now, does that mean they're going to pause and let this catch up? No, it doesn't. It just means that they don't feel the need to be as aggressive as what they have been. And the market has kind of been looking for a less aggressive Fed. Now, as I stated for Glass last night when I filled in for you and you were in the middle of a meeting, you know, I told him, for this rally into year end, if what we see today carries on beyond today and potentially can give us a little momentum and juice into year end, it's going to be short-lived until the fundamentals catch up and say, okay, hey, companies' earnings and revenue are beginning to grow, and the valuations of these companies make some sense. We're still a little bit elevated on valuations. They're not high. We're not way overvalued by any means. The only concern I have about where the price-to-earnings multiple is as we set today is that we know that the next few quarters' earnings estimates are still being pushed down.
Right.
So that number really should be higher than what it really is. That's where my concern is on valuation. So I don't feel as though we need a massive reset in valuation. But until earnings begin to grow and we can potentially grow into the valuations we have, we either need to trade sideways until we get into a better earnings environment or potentially go down a little bit to see a better price to earnings multiple. But I do still like the November-December feel-good season. Seasonality is, these are a couple of your better months. We got a decent inflation print. And as I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, it looks like the sellers are a little bit tired and worn out, as there hasn't been anywhere near as much selling activity. Not that there's been heavy buying, but there seems to be more buying interest than selling here in the last few weeks.
I was doing some quick math. If you take the last month, we dropped a half a point in inflation. If you continue to see that trend over the next 6 months, we would see inflation get down into the fours. And that's what you and I were talking about earlier today. You know, there is some logic behind the lag, and that's what the Fed said last week. They're going to keep an eye on that. That if you said, okay, this move is really affected more by that move of, you know, several months ago, so if we just let everything sort of pan out here, we could get ourselves down in the fours. But folks, that's not where they want to be. They want to be closer to twos, which means they're going to continue to raise rates. You're going to continue to see your cost of money going up, and that's just the way it is. It's an economic cycle we've got to kind of get through. But Rod, as I was saying before you came on, the markets move on expectations, right? So the market, the economy doesn't have to be getting better. It could be getting worse and the markets still go up. And we've seen that in our career several times. So I guess the theme for this show would be, here's where we are today. Here's where we're likely to go in the future. And folks, this is what you need to do with your own accounts. And as Rod said last week, it depends on when you need the money. Now, I have been playing that game a little bit with some people lately who need some money soon, but I'm not taking them out of the market right now because their situation changed. And we see that all the time. I mean, we plan and we hope, and you know, but things change. So if you needed money maybe in January or February or March, I don't know. That's one question. But if you don't need it until maybe next year or 2 years from now, I'd probably let it ride for a little while and see what happens before I pull the trigger. Because I don't know what the S&P is down right now, like 18-19% for the year-to-date, Hot Rod?
Actually, through yesterday's close, 21.35%. So
well, there we go.
Getting a little bit of that back today. But, yeah, we're still down. And that's kind of what I alluded to on Glass. I could see that maybe we get a decent rally into year-end that maybe can cut that year-to-date number in half. Unfortunately, I don't think we're getting back to flat on the year. But I think you could have a 10 to 12% rally into year-end. Part of what's going to help that is if what we see happening today has a little bit of legs, the market's been predominantly short this year, and it's paid off very well. Well, those shorts will begin to cover as they see this rally have some legs. That will give a little bit of more juice to the upside because they've got to go back and buy back the stocks that they're shorted. So they become a net buyer in that circumstance as opposed to a net seller, and that will juice the rally up a little bit. But as I said, as we get into 2023, then we have to begin to look at the fundamentals and say, okay, where are we at fundamentally, and does it make sense to continue this trend based on fundamentals? So to the point you're making, when do you need the money? The next 2 months may be an ideal opportunity for people who got overextended and took on more risk than what they really should have, based either on their own personal risk tolerance or, more importantly, timing of when they need those dollars. This may give them a good opportunity to free up some of those dollars needed in less than a year at slightly higher valuations and prices than what they had just an opportunity to do, say, a week ago or 3 weeks ago or a couple of months ago.
Well, and for people that are retiring right now and they have money that needs to be invested that hasn't been invested, I mean, the opportunities are great right now. Yields are high. We haven't seen fixed income like this forever. The market, you know, is down 20% for the year. You know, I think if you structure things correctly and you stick to your game plan and don't get nervous or change things at halftime, because, you know, we still have a half to play. I always say to people, don't get excited. It's not the score at halftime that matters. It's the end of the game that counts. Rod, thanks for taking the time as always, and I'll see you back at the ranch.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about inflation and how it erodes purchasing power and what you can do about that, okay? This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hey, I saw an interesting article before I get into the inflation talk. Japan loses appetite for U.S. bonds. So are a lot of others around the world. What does that mean, if anything? Well, some people say, oh, wow, they don't think we're a good bet any longer, so they're not buying our bonds. That is not the case. It's all about currency valuations. All of these currencies are getting banged up around the world, and the U.S., believe it or not, has a pretty strong dollar relative to almost every currency. Not everyone, but the big ones that we follow. And these countries are like, well, if I buy their debt, that's just going to continue to strengthen their dollar against our currency. So that's the main reason that they're not buying. And when you have the number one buyer of bonds unwinding their balance sheet, the Fed, Japan losing their appetite for bonds, all of this is driving rates way up. The cost of borrowing is skyrocketing. Of course, that makes my narrative even better, that with higher interest rates, that means the U.S. government has to borrow at higher interest rates too, and that means taxes will have to be higher in the future to pay for all of this. So What do you do about it? It's early November, right? Or actually, it's about mid-November now. But you still have time to do something as convert those taxable dollars. Take that 20% down in your S&P or whatever, move over to a Roth, pay the tax, and when you have the recovery, like in you, if what Rod says could happen happens, you could get back 10 or 15% of your tax money just in market gains. So what better time to do it than now? And you don't have much time left before the expiration of this year is happening. And the gift card that you have that says, if you do it before this date, this is your tax rate, goes away, right? That's it. And then we're one more year closer to that 2025, which makes it the very last year, unless they extend things. And there has been a little talk here and there about extending some of the current tax code. And I think they will. Some of the things that make so much sense to me, which is like the doubling of the standard deduction. I mean, that has been such a good thing for people. It's easy, and almost everybody does it. Almost everyone takes the standard deduction. I also think the qualified charitable distributions, when you're 70 and a half, being able to give money from the IRA tax-free to the charity, that's permanent as well. And you have to kind of laugh when you say permanent when it comes to tax law, because nothing really is permanent. It can be changed. But I thought it was interesting. I was reading through this article, and I thought, well, that headline, Japan loses appetite for U.S. bonds, would be alarming to the alarmist and say, oh my gosh, they're losing appetite. So is China, right? They're the number two and three buyers of our bonds next to ourselves. And yeah, it's not really that. It's they're trying to get their currencies up because they've just been getting killed. But also that's very inflationary too, right? All these higher interest rates, that's inflation. So what about your money and inflation? We've talked about this over the years on the show. And that is, how do you determine at a certain inflation rate how much money I'm going to have to need, or how much I'm going to need in the future to simply buy the things I do today? Well, a lot of you have heard about the rule of 72, right? When you're saving money, and that's basically you divide the return you expect into 72, and that tells you how long it will take to double your money. So you take, 72, divide it into your interest rate, and that tells you how long it is. So 7.2% divided into 70. Rule of 72 is 10 years. So it takes 10 years to double your money at 7.2%. All right. But when it comes to the flip side, it's like the reverse rule of 72. That is, how long will it take for me to need twice as much money to buy the same things I do today? Well, if we have a 4% inflation rate, take 72 divided by 4, and that's 18 years. So in 18 years, at 4% inflation, I will need twice as much money. So if I need $5,000 a month now, I'm going to need $10,000. Now, for decades, and much of my career, we haven't had to worry too much about that. In fact, we have clients that have literally never changed their distribution for 10 or 15 years, 20 years. It's crazy. Because you plan for that. Hey, today you take $2,000, but, in 10 years you're going to need $3,000. Well, people tend to adjust to what they have. It's kind of interesting. And when you go through the ages and stages of life and your spending patterns change, when you start off in a brand new retirement, guess what? You're at your most active time of retirement. And then there becomes a time where you're just not spending as much money, right? That's the slow-go years. And you've heard me talk about that. So I think that your spending over your age, getting older, tends to work some of that inflation stuff out. Now, that's sans the healthcare, right? Thank you to my attorney friends that taught me that word years ago. Sans, right? It means without, Latin. Anyway, that just makes me sound smarter than I am. Here's the bottom line. We need to worry about this stuff now. It is time to make sure that you have inflation built in your plan. I still think the spending as you age will continue to have a similar pattern. But when you use the reverse rule of 72, right? So I need twice as much money in 18 years. Well, what about in half that time, right? In 9 years. If I needed $5,000, I'm going to need $7,500. All right? It's all real. So it has to be planned for. And it's not to scare you, but it's to inform you. And how do you hedge inflation? You buy things that go up with inflation. What is that? It's stock, right? It's real estate. It's commodities. It's all the things that cost money, right? Or that benefit from inflation. What do you not want to buy? Things that are stagnant, right? You, like we talk about bonds. Yeah, it's great to buy a bond paying 5% right now, and you can do that probably, you know, for a while. But there's going to be a time where rates will come back down, just like they have been for forever, and it will be 2 or 3%. And if you're locked into 2 or 3% in a fixed income portfolio for 20 years, then that's going to erode your purchasing power. What else do you not want to do? Keep too much money in the bank. What else do you want to do, not want to do? Stick your money under your mattress. All those things do not work very well. What does work to your advantage, right, is a mortgage. Now, I love having my mortgage paid off when I retire, but can you imagine if you're 30 and you have a $2,000 mortgage payment and it feels like a lot, but all of a sudden when you are 50, it feels like $800 when you first started and you're making more money? So that's kind of making inflation work for you, not against you. But I just want everyone to understand that you definitely need to take it into consideration, where in the past, literally past 20 years, I haven't had to worry about it. We were concerned about it, but we never worried. In fact, we were fighting deflation for a while. Do you remember that? And that was more of a spending pattern thing, where we had a bunch of these baby boomers started to move into their older years. Their kids were off the payroll. They're saving money, paying down debts, but yet their kids haven't yet started creating families, buying homes, buying cars, you know, all the stuff that they did that really stimulated this economy throughout the 90s, but they are now doing that. And that's why I sit here and look about kind of the perfect storm going forward. You have a ton of baby boomers that are saving a ton of money, but where are they saving it? In the stock market. So you have buyers, right? That makes prices go up. You have on the backside all of these millennials. I called them the echo boomers, right? The babies of the boomers. They are doing all the stuff that their parents did, and sometimes even more. You know, you buy your first house, you have some kids, you know, it's not even discretionary spending, it's the stuff you have to spend money on will drive the economy. 70% of our GDP is driven by consumer spending. It's been that way for a long time, and it's going to continue to be that way. So I'm just giving you guys some information, some education, and hopefully a little bit of hope. All right, let me come back. Lessons learned from someone who didn't deal with getting their affairs in order and what the people left behind are dealing with now. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, folks, you know, we're always like putting stuff off that we don't want to deal with. Well, getting your affairs in order is one of them. Now, most people think I'm getting my affairs in order because I have something right around the corner, right? A surgery that could go wrong. Maybe I've been told I have terminal cancer, I mean, or anything at all. But the bottom line is, when I'm talking about getting your affairs in order, I'm talking about, hey, what happens if tomorrow I don't wake up, right? What happens? And most people go, well, I guess a will, right? You need a will. Yeah, that would be nice. You know, do I have someone that knows where everything is? Have I even taken care of my beneficiary designations? Do I have dogs? Am I married, not married? Do I have kids? Well, the situation I'm going to share is a little bit unique because it's different than most situations. You know, I have Misty. We have Will. I still have brothers and sisters, nieces and nephews, pretty big extended family. You know, they'll figure it out, even if I didn't do a very good job of doing any planning. But the first thing was that these folks were clients of mine. And I was telling someone the other day, they became clients when they were about 65. Well, they were clients, it was 1995, I think, or something like that. Anyway, they were clients for like 20-some years. So they literally were like in their 80s when they passed away. So that's kind of a neat journey that I had with them, and they were great people. Well, everything went to their one and only daughter, and she was not married, never been married, no kids. And we're trying to get all mom and dad stuff in her name, and we were just about there, and I get a phone call. And it was from a friend, and she was like, hey, she passed away. I'm like, what happened? Well, she had a heart attack. And she said, and we don't know anything. We don't want her utilities to get shut off. We don't want her house, money. We don't even know what to do. So what happens many times, the banks will freeze bank accounts. You know, then there's no one to pay the bills. Well, is it her friend's responsibility to pay the bill? Well, her friend is a pretty good friend. So she wants to make sure that everything is okay. And she's asking me, do you know if she had a will? I said, honestly, I do not know. But I do know she has beneficiaries on her accounts that we've set up here. Now, remember, a beneficiary trumps everything. So even if she had a will and it said, leave it to, you know, Joe Schmo, but her beneficiary forms on her annuities that she inherited, her IRAs that she inherited, say, go to this person over here, that's where it all goes. So we were able to say, okay, here's her beneficiaries. Now, you know, so at least we had somewhere to start. She had two dogs and one cat. Who's going to take care of those? There was the checking accounts got frozen, all the stuff. Now, she could just walk away, but she's not that kind of person. So what should this person should have done? What could she have done differently? Well, a lot. You would think losing your parents, it'd wake you up to think, yeah, I need to do a will at least. I need to have an executor, someone's going to run the show. I need someone, a trusted person that's going to know where all my passwords are. I need a power of attorney while I'm living. I need a healthcare representative while I'm living. I need all this stuff. I need to make sure I have proper beneficiaries in place so that if something happens to me, then it's just like break the glass, grab the key, and this is where I go. There was a safety deposit box involved. No one knows where the key is, and no one has permission to get in. So the state of Indiana has some ways you can get this all figured out, but it is difficult. So thankfully, she has some really great friends left behind that has taken on the responsibility, and they're not even beneficiaries on things. So I'm just saying that there's a lot of lessons to be learned from someone who didn't deal with things and didn't get their affairs in order and have left a mess on her friend's hands. So I know she wouldn't have wanted that. Well, who would want that? But you can do something about it. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, you know what, I've not taken time to get my affairs in order, and a lot of times you don't even know what that means. That's why you sit down with someone that's been through this many, many times before. You know, I wrote in my book about packing your parachute, right? And the story about how the naval guy packs parachutes every day. And the pilot had to be ejected from his plane. He ejected his parachute and safely to the ground, captured and all that. And years later, as a motivational speaker, this guy comes up and says, hey, I want to meet you. I packed your parachute. And the guy looked at him and he said, wow. He said, do you want someone who packs a parachute once in their entire life and hope they get it right? Or do you want someone who packs parachutes every single day? That's what you want. And there's a lot of people around that pack parachutes every single day and that know how to help you think this through, right? Because it's not just the mechanics of it all. It's thinking it through. It's informing people. That's the key. Making sure you have someone to take care of your dog and your cat. If you have children, who's going to take care of them? Who's going to take care of the money? Who's going to be my trust protector? Who's going to do? And there's a lot of things to think about, but when you have someone that helps you understand what this is, what does it do? What are things that I've done? I'd use my own personal life. This is what I did. You know, when I was this age and my son was this age, this was the plan. You know, now he's 22 in December. Now what? You know, so I rethink our plan about every 5 years. And it's good to do that because things change. And it's easy to change. Super easy to change beneficiaries. Super easy to get your estate plan updated. It doesn't cost an arm and a leg. There's a lot of great attorneys here in Bloomington. If you need a referral or recommendation, I know all the players and what they're really, really good at. And who you should see, email me over at cfci.us and I will point you in the right direction. And I always like to match up personalities too. You know, it's just like financial advisor, right? You want to go, like if you said, hey, I have an appointment with David today. You want to be excited that you get to see David today. And I get to be excited that I get to see Jane today. If you go to the doctor, I'm not really excited about going to see J.D. Hetty, but I'll tell you, I really like J.D. Hetty, and it's always enjoyable when I go in for my annual checkup. Or if you go to see an attorney, you want to connect, right, at a different level than just professionally. So I always like to match up the attorneys that I know that do a really great job, and a lot of them do, with the personality of the person that needs the help. All right, that's my lecture of the day. I'll quit preaching to you. When we come back, what are a couple other things you should be thinking about as we approach year end? I'll get into that. And then also, I had a question this week. I have had this a lot, many, many times. Life insurance. Do I really need it? Well, we're going to talk about why you need life insurance and why even in retirement you might consider keeping some. I'll be back at Your Money with David Hayes. All right, not too much time left in today's program, but enough time to get over a couple of minutes and other topics. So something that I mentioned last week, I mentioned in podcast, never let a good loss go to waste. Well, here we are with about a month and a half to go before the end of the year. And if you have money in accounts that are not IRAs and Roth IRAs, just they're taxable accounts, take advantage of the losses. Harvest those losses. Don't let them go to waste. We talked about it in a podcast, you know, in real detail about this. But just take the loss, right? You can rebuy something. It just can't be the exact same thing. If you wanted to sell a bunch of stocks over here that are down 20%, go buy an S&P 500 ETF or something, right? Then a month later, if you want to own those stocks again, you can buy them again. Or match it up against a stock that has appreciated over time. And harvest the loss on one, take the gain on the other, offset them. You can rebuy the gain right away. There's no wash sale rules on gains. But harvest these losses. If you don't use up your losses this year, you get to bank them for future use. What's better to know? I mean, no one wants to lose money. But remember, you're not really losing it. You're just harvesting the loss. You're still buying something else that would go up if the market went up. But you have the losses. And then down the road, when you're like, man, I don't want to sell that because I don't want to pay the gain. Oh, wait a second. There's more. I have $50,000 of losses that I can use up. It's like Christmas time. So harvest your losses. Take some time. Call your advisor. Because like I said before, not everyone actively does this. We literally have two people on this right now. They are next week going to be seriously going after each account. And what's crazy is every single account's different. Right? It'd be easy if everybody had the same thing, everyone bought it at the same time, right? But no, that's not the case. Everyone owns the same thing in some cases, but they all bought it at different times. All right. Oh, I don't know if I feel like talking about life insurance, but I'll briefly talk about it just because it came up. Let's talk about not the obvious things, right? You're young, you have kids, you have debts, you want to self-complete plans, like you want to educate your kids, you want to make sure your spouse will have a great retirement. Yeah, those are all the reasons to own life insurance, you know, while you're kind of in those accumulation phases. But then what about after that? Well, after that, you have the most wonderful tax-free transfer of wealth vehicle there is under the tax code that never gets touched, never gets even really even talked about. And that's the tax-free treatment of life insurance, Section 7702 under the tax code. Great transfer of wealth. Allows you to go spend all the rest of your money. I told someone the other day that $1 million policy, you're thinking about letting it go, and they were like 70. And I'm like, wait. I doubt you could buy this today. If you can't buy it today, it's probably valuable. Number two, if you don't want it, you could sell it. There's companies out there that'll buy your life insurance policy from you. Number three, what if you wanted to use it for long-term care? A lot of these life insurance policies double as long-term care policies, right? So I'm always like really talking to people before you just go and just do something, know what your options are. Don't just cancel your life insurance policy. Know what your options are. So in this case, this person had $1 million and we ended up doing something to make it available for long-term care, and he's happy. And then you know what, if he dies and his kids get it tax-free. And I said, now, you know what you get to do now that you're going to leave this $1 million likely to your kids tax-free, which is like $2 million taxable. You can go spend the rest of your money, go spend it. This guy gives you a permission slip. If you're worried about leaving money to your kids, go spend it, go spend everything else, leave the life insurance to them. They'll have it in a couple weeks after a death certificate is issued. It's all tax-free, no strings attached, no rules to follow like you do with IRAs. It's just wonderful to get it. And I have never in a million years had a beneficiary say to me, after their mom or dad passed away, or husband or wife, say, why in the world did you suggest that they have so much life insurance? Never happened. Not once. Never. Just food for thought. All right, let's take another quick break. Come back, wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. We'll be right back. David, you might ask, why are you so big on life insurance? I'm not like trying to sell you on the idea that you need a bunch of life insurance. I'm just telling you that I have a lot of life insurance, and I'm pretty darn sure if I died, Misty would not be complaining about all the resources that we committed to the life insurance policies over our long life, hopefully long life, to make it happen. And I like tax-free, right? You should know that by now. All right, what else is going on? Well, we are ending Medicare open enrollment in period soon, and I was going to have Josh come on again because I love when he comes on and tells his success stories and ways he's helped people, and if you need to talk to a local trusted guy, he's available. But guess what? I guess too many of you have taken him up on it because he was completely booked as we were recording this show on Thursday. But I said, don't worry, Josh. I'll share some stories that I know personally that have happened. People came in and said, man, that was a lot easier than I thought. That's a good one, right? Rather than you try to navigate this on your own. Number two, he's like, wow, I was able to lower my cost on my supplement down to nearly zero and pick up dental and vision that I didn't have before. So that's what the old Josh Norris is doing today. He's out there helping people make good decisions. I've also heard him say, he told me to keep what I have because there's nothing else better available. That's a great one, right? And don't forget how Josh gets paid. I used to say to people, see how someone's paid, and that's generally how they behave, right? So if you're getting paid commission, which that's how these guys get paid, what do they want to do? They want to sell you something. Well, that just shows you the character of Josh and the environment that hopefully we've created is that you just do what's best. And if you do what's best, then everything else will work out. So for him to say, hey, you really shouldn't change, you should keep what you have, that shows to me, and this was told to me by someone, not Josh, but someone else, and Josh never brought it up. And I thought, hey, there you go. That's exactly what we want here at the office. So, hey, I hope you had a great week. I know it's been a crazy week, and some of you are happy, some of you are mad, and some of you don't care. And unfortunately, based on the turnout locally, most of you don't care. So anyway, my cousin did not win school board. As I mentioned last week, it wasn't me. He tried. He got 20% of the vote. I don't know how you win a race. I've never run anything before. But I did have a sign out, a couple signs, and that's what created the interest in finding out if I was actually running. No, I'm not running for school board. Too many conflicts of interest there for me. Anyway, that's it for this week. Guys, I've got a lot of people begging to be guests on the show as we wrap up the year, and I'm going to take them up on it. More to come. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.